We made this.
Welcome to Podcast 616 on the We Made This Podcast Network, a place where we discuss everything in the Marvel Universe. I'm Dan Owen, editor of framerated.co.uk, and this week we're continuing our weekly coverage of Moon Knight with Episode 4's The Tomb, which finds a now powerless Mark Spector and his alternate personality Stephen Grant helping Layla break into Amit's final resting place. And joining me to help excavate the episode is writer and podcaster Craig McKenzie from Neil Before Pod. Hello, Craig.
Hello. I'm ready to talk some multiple personalities and tomb raiding.
This is your first appearance, isn't it, on Moon Knight?
First and only, unless someone's sick over the next 2 weeks. Yeah, there's quite a short little blast on these mini-series, isn't it? You don't have many chances to chat about them, really.
No, well, I was lucky enough to be on the first episode, so in a way I'm just doing the mid-season appraisal, I suppose, from my perspective.
Kind of, yeah.
But nobody will ever know what I thought about the last episode or anything. So yes, we'll talk about Moon Knight. So we are now halfway through, or technically, I suppose, over halfway through, the season. There's only 6 episodes, strangely, and they're quite brief, some of these Marvel shows. I keep on thinking they're going to be 8 or 10 episodes, but only 6.
We're entering the third act, aren't we, basically, of this long film.
Yeah, so how do you feel so far about Moon Knight now that we're into the final stretch?
I'm really enjoying it. Moon Knight's a character I don't know an awful lot about. I've only read his appearances in other people's comics. One Spider-Man video game he was in. It's pretty new territory for me because I'm only obliquely aware of the character. I was new about the multiple personalities and the phases of the moon and all that stuff, all the weird stuff associated with them, but pretty fresh for me, which is kind of rare with these comic book characters, really. Normally I have a decent working knowledge going in, so I like that Marvel's branching out into territory that I'm not familiar with. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I think Oscar Isaac is great. We'll talk more about it probably, but there's very few people in the world, I think, that could have such good chemistry with themselves. And he has great chemistry with himself. It's so good.
This episode, episode 4, so it's kind of split in, I was going to say in half, but it's more towards the very end. Things take a bit of a twist. So you kind of get two, there's two distinct things to talk about, I suppose. There's the first kind of 3/4 of the story, and then there's the kind of surprise that happens towards the end. So we'll talk about the less interesting part first, sort of action-adventure kind of aspect in the tomb itself. So this involves Layla and Mark Spector trying to find final resting place of Amit, who's the god that Arthur Harrow is in kind of cahoots with. So how did you find the first half? Slightly more generic episode, I thought, in general, up until the end. So I was slightly bored of it, to be honest. It was going through the motions for me, but how did you feel about it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think the action was familiar. And was it not Stephen that spent most of the action, really? Mark was inside for most of it. It was only towards the end he emerged to chop people's hands off and what have you. I thought it was competently done. I felt the threat. I was interested in the way they were solving the puzzles and so on. But yeah, it's not anything we haven't seen in other things. We've seen this done in Indiana Jones. We've seen it in the various Tomb Raider movies. We've seen them do this sort of stuff in other things, and they didn't really make it stand out in any way. Not that that made it bad as such. It was just, I wouldn't go as far to say as I was bored, but I was just thinking, yeah, I've got a good idea of what's going on here. She's precariously hanging off a ledge or being attacked by something or whatever. Yeah, it's what you would expect, but it was fine. It's interesting that they've actually built sets on this show, because I know Marvel gets a lot of criticism for you're just in a big green screen room, whereas this, they've put a lot of effort into building the sets and giving a real sense of space. You really feel like they are somewhere, and it's dirty, it's dusty, it's sandy. You can't replicate that with green screen necessarily, not successfully.
Well, I wasn't bored. Maybe it was the wrong word, but I just thought it was kind of, I think of Egyptian kind of action adventure movies, they all kind of have very familiar beats to them, in general. Indiana Jones films, we podcasted together about
Uncharted.
Yeah, we podcasted about Uncharted together as well.
Says everything about how memorable that movie is.
Yeah, so they're all very familiar, and yeah, I think this is, you know, pulling from that kind of genre, and so for me, it was kind of going through the motions. I was waiting for like a surprise, which I kind of did get towards the end, which I was pleased about. But yeah, I suppose there was a few things along the way to talk about. It was all about Layla's father. It was an interesting moment here where we kind of discover that she believes that Mark killed her father. It turns out that isn't true, or Mark says it's not true. But there may be more to that story. He was definitely present when her father was killed anyway. So that was like an interesting moment, you know, a little bit of extra information given there. And also, obviously there's a bit of mystery as well with this. We don't quite know who did kill her father. I have a theory. Do you have a theory?
I have more than a theory because I watch a YouTube channel where they do breakdowns of this show. And the character, I don't think he's named, but the mercenary that kills her father is a character in the comics who may not show up here, but I forget the guy's name. It's not really important to the context of this. But with Layla calling Mark out on that and trying to get the truth out of them, I thought that was interesting because it plays into Harrow's strengths as a villain, because he was giving her the means to connect the dots to get to Mark. He didn't explicitly implicate him. He's like, well, doesn't that seem suspicious? Don't you want to think about this a bit more? Did Mark kill him? I don't know, did he? And then she goes and confronts him and Mark's like, well, no, I didn't kill him, but I was there. And she turns it back around with the, well, so you brought my father's murderer to him? And he's like, yeah. And also, I was supposed to die, but then I came back. Which was great foreshadowing for the whole Mark will presumably be resurrected thing. Without making it overt, it was a nice little, okay, Conchu did it. And then that's what happened later. It means that the shock of him getting shot actually works, because it's foreshadowed in a character-driven way rather than being a just so you know for later type way.
Well, I haven't watched the YouTube video you have, so you probably know the answer then as to exactly what happened with her dad and who killed her dad.
Well, I know in the comics, I don't know here. It might be different.
Well, my theory, I'll still mention my theory in case it's going to be proven correct. But I'm thinking that Mark has got a third personality, which I think is a common thing people are expecting, that there's a third identity that he has beyond Mark and Stephen. And I'm thinking that identity is the one who killed Layla's father's. What do you think to that? That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, well, Mark doesn't think he did it. He thinks he was present. I don't know how that quite works, but I was just thinking it would be this third personality, because I've got a feeling that the third personality is more of a nastier person. So that was my kind of theory.
There is definitely a third personality, because you have the blackouts in the previous episode where Stephen says, that wasn't me, I didn't do that. And Mark's like, well, neither did I. And then in this one, when Stephen comes out of the sarcophagus towards the end, there's that third sarcophagus that neither of them are in any way interested in approaching. So they're both aware that there's another guy in there and they don't want to go near it because it seems like that's the really dangerous one, or at least that's what they think.
Layla herself then, how do you feel about her so far? She's was introduced after the episode that I reviewed, the first episode. So she's been in here now for a few episodes. So how do you feel about her? Is it an interesting character, her relationship with Mark and the kind of strange kind of love triangle in a way that's happening here? Because she kind of has got a relationship with Mark, but she's kind of finding some intrigue with Stephen. She's coming to realise that he's a bit more than he initially seemed. So she seems a little bit more drawn to him in this episode. How do you feel about Layla?
I really like Layla. The actress Mae Kalmawi, I think that's how you pronounce her name, she's brilliant in this. And it's one of those things where, actually, she was the lead of the show, I'd be quite happy with this, because she's really good. The tragic backstory, everybody has a tragic backstory, don't they? It's an uncomfortable trope in everything at the moment. Everyone's got dead parents or some kind of tragedy in their past that they have to work past. But her motivation for finding the stolen artifacts and returning them, while keeping a bit for herself, she's not completely altruistic, quite like that. And as you say, her dynamic with Mark and Stephen is distinct and interesting. It makes me wonder how her marriage with Mark actually worked, because it seems like they have absolutely nothing in common. It seems like they have nothing to talk about. And even in this episode, she says, I don't want Mark out here. He's going to be reckless and stupid and he's going to ruin it for us. And Stephen's the one, they have more common ground. They connect more naturally. They connect on an intellectual level. They're both interested in history and mythology and all that stuff. Whereas Mark is just a bit of a bruiser. He's kind of street smart, which I suppose might explain why she's drawn to him in that way, because they are both very capable. But beyond that, what is there? Maybe that's why it wasn't working or was doomed to fail.
Yeah, I was always confused about if Layla has a relationship with Mark that I think has lasted some years, has she never been aware of the fact that he's got this mental issue where he's got a split personality, essentially? So it must be a recent thing. I'm still a bit unclear as to what has happened to Mark. Is it only recently he's had Stephen appear?
He did say he was able to keep it under control until recently. I think he said that in the last episode. Yeah, he said that to Layla when they were on the boat, I think. I think that's where
But then Stephen has a job in the museum, doesn't he? So I'm just thinking, how long has he been doing that for? I don't know. There's certain aspects of the show where I'm still a little bit unclear as to how it really works.
Maybe it's a metaphor for infidelity, as in you have people that are cheating on their partners that are living this other life somewhere else that their partner doesn't even know about. And yeah, maybe he's been just a museum gift shop worker for years, and whoever this third guy is, he's been living three lives and she hasn't noticed until recently.
That's probably accurate. How about Harrow, though, as the villain? So Ethan Hawke's quite a big name. He's been in the show from the start, and we've kind of been developing Harrow a little bit. I like the fact that he used to be Moon Knight, essentially, and he's like the old version of this avatar now, with Khonshu. But he's kind of split from the teachings of Khonshu, and he's now gone more to the side of Amit. I'm still, you know, I know we haven't finished the series yet, and this might all become clear, but I'm still like a little bit unclear. I think you're intentionally meant to be a bit unclear as to who's the villain here, because Harrow is painted as a villain, but he obviously has a perspective that you can kind of find some value in, or you can see where he's coming from. And sometimes Khonshu does come across as quite strange and maybe not entirely trustworthy, to me anyway. So sometimes I'm thinking, well, maybe Harrow's got a point, and Amit, I haven't really seen Amit yet. So, you know, is Amit going to be an evil presence, or is it just two Egyptian gods with different ideologies? You know, is Harrow, do you think, an out-and-out villain, or is he a bit more interesting than that?
Like all great villains, he believes that he isn't a villain. He thinks that he's on the right track, he's the good guy, and his motivation makes sense. The idea that he feels betrayed and abused by Khonshu, you can believe that, again, based on Khonshu. It's that whole, he'll never be done with you. He says he will, but he won't be done with you. And you can believe that. And these gods have their own agendas. I mean, we saw Eternals, right? The Celestials weren't honest with the Eternals when they made them. And there's connections you can draw there, because it is very similar about this non-interference and gods interfering with humanity, or whether they should or shouldn't interfere with humanity. And I don't think good or evil is a black and white concept that can apply to these beings, because they are so far beyond or above that they won't think in those terms. So Amit is just responsible for whatever. Khonshu is responsible for whatever. The others are responsible for whatever. I wish they would do more with this god stuff, because that meeting last week was a great idea that was just sloppily executed, because it's just a bunch of guys standing around chatting and not really saying very much. But yeah, Harrow is really interesting in that respect. His idea of the kind of mystical minority report, let's kill people and stop crimes before they happen, which is the same thing that S.H.I.E.L.D. /Hydra were going to be doing in Winter Soldier as well. They were going to be gunning people down with the helicarrier before they could be a problem. So yeah, it's an idea that the MCU's flirted with before, and they've moved away from exploring the question about that. I suppose the question is a bit repetitive, as in the killing baby Hitler. You know, is that a good thing? Should you kill baby Hitler? No, probably not, because it's still a baby, right? But Harrow, I find really interesting. I find the way he manipulates people great, and there's little interesting tics that he has, the way he moves with the cane, wearing shoes with glass in them. Still don't know why he does that. Be happy if they don't explain it. It's just a weird thing that he does. Maybe it's something to do with he didn't feel pain when he was Moon Knight, so he's quite enjoying feeling pain.
Oh, no, that's a thing, isn't it, that a lot of religious zealots do, to sort of prove their faith, yeah. I think, was it the film St. Maud recently? I don't know if you've seen that film. I think she does a similar thing in that. She's like another religious kind of crackpot, essentially. So she does a similar thing. She puts, I can't remember what it is now, but she puts something in her shoes as well and walks on that. That's a signal he's a religious nut job, essentially. Just to prove his faith. It's like in Da Vinci Code, where you got the monk flogging himself.
Oh yes, yeah, I have seen that. Yeah,
he is an interesting character. It's a kind of villain that you can't do in the MCU movies, I suppose, because he's a bit too quiet and more of an insular character. Obviously with the movies you want more of an outgoing, visually distinct kind of a character, don't you? And so with the TV show, I'm reminded a little bit about David Tennant as well in Jessica Jones, and his villain. It's the kind of villains that work well for television. They're a bit more interesting, I think, a bit more to them, a bit more depth. So yeah, I think he works well, and Yeah, so I'm enjoying Harrow. Overall with Moon Knight, it sounds like you enjoy it. I'm a bit more on the fence with Moon Knight. We're getting towards the end. I'm a bit worried that there's only 6 episodes and there's only 2 more episodes left to wrap everything up. And I'm still not entirely sold on Moon Knight, to be honest. I like the idea in principle, but the further we get into it, the twist that happens in this episode, which we'll get into in a second, that's the main thing to talk about, isn't it? Yeah. The ending. But apart from that happening, that has perked my interest up a little bit. But until that point, I was a little bit kind of, I don't know, I'm not gripped by Moon Knight as much as other people have been. And one of my issues with it is that I'm not too convinced of how they're depicting Mark and Stephen as characters and having a character who's got this DID, dissociative identity disorder. So normally, see, with like Jekyll and Hyde, or characters like that, it's always like one actor who's playing two characters, and you see the one actor on screen and he just becomes two different people, like within Split as well. Have you seen Split?
Yeah.
So similar thing there, where it's all about the performance of the actor, James McAvoy in that case, and he's playing all these different characters, and which kind of like, you know, Oscar Isaac is doing that, but you have also the fact that you see the reflections and you see the other character in the reflection. And I'm trying to work out if that's working for me, because to me it seems more like it's almost like there's I don't know, it seems like more like somebody's, it's not like one person playing two people, it's a bit different to that. It doesn't seem as interesting to me somehow. I don't know, but it seems more like when you see the reflection and you've got Mark looking in a puddle or something, and Stephen's there talking to him. It's like Stephen is like a separate thing, like trapped now in a puddle, if that makes sense,
yeah.
Or a reflection, and not so much him. You never see him talking to himself. You know what I mean? You don't get that enjoyment that you get with other takes on this general idea, where you have the character, like you see the actor arguing with himself and flitting in between different personalities. You don't really get that here. You're always just seeing Mark or Stephen, and then he just glance off to a mirror or something, and then you'll get the other personality talk to him in a mirror. So it's just like there's just two people, and one temporarily gets trapped in a reflection.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know. There's something to how they're dealing with it. I just don't find it as interesting.
So the other thing you're talking about is a bit like with Gollum in Lord of the Rings, for example, when he's flitting between being Gollum and Sméagol, and he is talking to himself. They used reflections to show that, as in Peter Jackson would shoot the water, the puddle or whatever, to show it's now Sméagol and Gollum.
That's a good example. Yeah, that's a good example. But the trick there that Peter Jackson did is he did that, which is fine. But you also had it where you would see Gollum be both characters, wouldn't you? You'd
yes,
see that kind of as well. You'd have both. You'd have the reflection thing, which is like an interesting visual way of depicting it.
Yeah.
But you also have just the performance of Andy Serkis. You'd get both. And I think maybe I just want this show to do both.
Okay.
And it doesn't seem to do that. It seems to just have it where it's just the reflections trick all the time.
Yeah. So
and it just...
When I'm reviewing this, I'm very careful about making comments about the actual disorder side of it. I even feel uncomfortable calling it a disorder, even though it's called dissociative identity disorder. That's the name of the condition. But I know nothing about it, really. And then I've seen things where characters have had multiple personalities before, and I'm pretty sure that when they're written in those kinds of things, Angel and Angelus, for example, to use that term, they're two different characters that inhabit the same body somehow, more or less. And I don't know that that's how it works. I don't know how dissociative identity disorder really works. I'd be inclined to say that this show is not doing it accurately. Because as far as I understand it, there is always a main personality, and the secondary personality is created as a defense mechanism. You become a child when you're feeling vulnerable or whatever, stuff like that. I understand that much. But in this, they're two different guys, and they have lives independent of each other. They have memories independent of each other, but they're aware of each other. And I'm not sure how that will end up being resolved, if it will be resolved. Is it just going to be they're going to have to share time now and again? But I find the two characters by themselves very interesting. And the interactions, I think it's quite creative that any reflective surface means that they can talk to each other. And I'm really sold on Oscar Isaac's performance, because his physicality is amazing. In this episode, when he lets Mark take over, when Layla's shouting at him, you can see he stops hunching. And it's just a brief thing. It's just it reminds me of Christopher Reeve in the Donner cut of Superman 2, where ditches the Clark Kent persona and then becomes Superman. You can just see the physical change. And Oscar Isaac is amazing at that. So that's where you can see the difference in the two characters sort of in camera, really, without any trickery. And those really work. And the accent, you can suggest that it's Mark putting on the Stephen accent, but he's not very good at English accents. That's why he's got this really cheesy, stereotypical radio-ish English accent, but then Stephen is a real guy, clearly. And so I don't know what they do to resolve that.
Yeah, what you've said there is interesting, because it's... Is Mark the prime identity and Stephen's the split that's happened? Or is it the other way around? It's still not clear even on that. And I think I asked that in the first episode as well.
Or is that not the case? Are they both equally valid? Are they both different people? You know?
Yeah, like you were saying, what you were saying earlier, with Mark having some, you know, if how Stephen has emerged, you know, why would a personality like Mark need like a Stephen to come out?
Yeah.
It makes sense that Stephen would need like a Mark character to come out and be like
fight his battles and stuff.
In that kind of thing. Yeah, I can't see it working the other way. So maybe that shows that Stephen is the dominant one or the original one. And Mark's like his kind of fantasy figure come to life. Just that aspect of the show, I just keep on catching myself thinking, oh, I wish they'd do it a different way. I just don't like how they've chosen to portray it. Possibly it's because they've done a direct adaptation of what the comics do. And I haven't read the comics, but I'd assume that the comics would want to do it this way, because the comics being a visual medium, it's easier to have maybe comic book panels where you see the character looking into reflections and talking to the reflection. That works. Like doing a comic book of Split, for example, it would be very awkward and difficult, because you'd have to just have the same character on the panel and then have to like change the font to indicate that it's a different person talking out of that figure. So maybe they've just kind of like copied what the comics are doing and forgotten the fact that this isn't a comic, it's a TV show, and there's a different way of maybe doing it, and in my opinion anyway, and I think they could do a better job of it. Maybe I'm just the only person who thinks that.
I'm just sort of seeing it as two different characters that are inhabiting the same body for some reason, rather than it being two halves of the same whole, because they feel more like different people to me. And I don't know if that's what they're intending to get across, but that's what I'm reading into it. So I'm okay with that, if that's what it is. And then if they, I don't need it explicitly pointed out, but at some point if they come around and be like, yeah, we are just valid people. And I know there's some theories around maybe there are multiverse variants inhabiting the same body and stuff. And I'm like, nah, that sounds rubbish. I'd hate that. No. It's just, it could just be, this is weird and mystical. And for some reason, two people exist within one brain. It just happens. Or three people, or however many personas exist inside this one guy.
Okay, well, that's my big criticism of Moon Knight anyway, out of the way. I'm sure other people just haven't given that any consideration, or they're happy with how it's being done. But I don't know. I keep thinking about that, and maybe they should change how they're doing it. Okay, so we'll get into the big twist then, where, as we've mentioned, Mark is shot by Harrow, and there's a slow motion shot where we're falling backwards. And then we're thrown into this bright white psychiatric hospital full of people from Stephen and Mark's life. Lots of familiar faces there. And there's a sketch of Khonshu that we see. There's a Moon Knight looking action figure. The adventure that he's been on in the tomb is kind of shown as a kind of like an Indiana Jones B-movie knockoff called Tomb Buster on television. Harrow is even there as a therapist. And it's the fairly common twist, I suppose. I've seen this kind of done many times in different TV shows and stuff, where all of a sudden, maybe, you know, this is the reality and everything we've been watching has been a fantasy. And really, Mark, or Stephen, I think it is Stephen, is just a patient in a mental hospital. And everything we've been watching has just been a fantasy of his, or a daydream, or something. So it was an interesting twist. I won't, you know, say it wasn't. You definitely made me sit up and think, oh, okay, this is different. We're getting to a different part of the story here. This is taking a bit of a turn. But the more I think about it, the more I think, well, but it's obviously not that, because within this scene, it's already the case that Stephen detects something is wrong, and he runs out of the office away from Harrow, and he meets up with Mark, who's now in like his own body.
Yeah, it's the other way around. It's Mark that is in the asylum.
Opposite, the other way around. But yeah, so, but straight away, there's already the main character there doubting that any of this is real, and he has to escape. And so even the main character is already convinced that this is all just a nonsense and wants to get out. So I don't know, in a way, it kind of undid its own twist within that scene almost. I would have thought it would have been better just to have cut it a bit earlier and had episode 5 spend time in this institution where you're not entirely sure if this is the truth of Stephen's existence or not. And then reveal that at the end of that episode, maybe. But it seems strange to me that they kind of went straight into that situation where it seemed pretty obvious that this was all just a mindscape or like a near death hallucination that he's having. What did you think, or did you enjoy it a lot more than me?
I thought the twist was interesting, but like you say, I think it moves too quickly. So they don't give you any time to sit there and doubt anything, because they immediately move it forward. They immediately get the plot moving again. You get Mark and Stephen encountering each other and so on. And yeah, I've seen plenty of examples of this before. We had the Buffy episode, Normal Again, which suggested that she was just crazy and hallucinating this whole vampire stuff. And Smallville did an episode called Labyrinth that was the same idea. Deep Space Nine's Far Beyond the Stars suggests that maybe this is the concoction of a writer that was sick of racism, this whole Star Trek thing, or at least Deep Space Nine. So it's not an uncommon storytelling thing, and TV shows will eventually get round to it, usually, if they run long enough in the fantasy or sci-fi genre, because it's a good thing to play with. The fact that the premise of your show is so ridiculous does the heavy lifting on the maybe you're crazy thing all by itself. This couldn't possibly exist. Why would you think it could? That's the thing you go on. And then the better versions of the episodes will make you, even though you know it's not, because it's in the case of Buffy, it takes place towards the end of the fifth season. There's a few episodes left, so you know that it's not going to be the end result. But it does get you to a point where you're like, oh no, wait a minute. This is making sense in a way. And there's no time for that here. And yeah, I would have liked to see a whole episode with it. The other connection you can easily draw a line to is Legion, where that opened with him in an insane asylum. And they kept going back to it and things throughout the run of the show. And I felt like it was a bit Diet Legion, actually, the way that they approached it.
Yeah, yeah. I think I mentioned Legion in my first episode with Moon Knight as well, with Tony talking about it. And yeah, I think Legion is a better version of this show in general, to be honest. but with this episode leading into very Legion-esque territory, it just brought it more to the fore, I think, that, oh, Legion did this. And yeah, but with Legion, though, like you were saying, I spent the first season, I think, of Legion thinking it was possibly all just a nonsense. And he genuinely was just a crazy person in that hospital. It convinced you of that for a very long time.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't even be like a disappointing thing if that was the case. You know what I mean? So it was interesting.
Well, Legion is almost completely inaccessible to people, I think. So if they'd fully leaned into Legion-esque storytelling in this show, you would have lost the audience pretty much. I think Legion existed as this wacky offshoot, but in the MCU, they can only really push it so far. And I think this has pushed it, as a TV show, pushed it much further than some of the other MCU stuff does. But anybody that was expecting this to be new, radical and groundbreaking in the context of this brand that needs to be maintained was kidding themselves. I was never expecting that, but they've pushed it enough, I think. And I don't subscribe to the idea that the MCU is cookie cutter and samey. I don't think it is. And I recognise that there is a synergy to everything that they make, but at the same time, I feel like everything's different enough. So I'm able to enjoy it and pick out what those differences are, really. And I think some people just see it as all one big malaise, which is fair enough as a point of view, but I just don't subscribe to that idea. And I think this show has done a good job of pushing it a little bit, but you always have to come back. It's a bit like in WandaVision, where it's like, yeah, we can play around with grief and whatever for 8 episodes or however many, but the final episode, it still needs to be 2 people shooting lasers at each other in the sky. It's just the way it works.
That's how it goes. It's written into the contract for everyone.
So expect lasers in the next couple of episodes of Moon Knight.
Yeah, well, I think it's just the timing of it. It just seemed a bit odd to me. But anyway, it is, you know, like I say, I haven't read any of the comic books or anything like that, but I've done a bit of research, as usual, for these podcasts before we begin. And I am aware that this twist is very much informed by a 2016 comic book storyline by Jeff Lemire, Greg Smallwood and Jordi Belair, who wrote a story where it's all about Moon Knight and the fact that he wakes up and is in a mental institution, and there's a very real possibility that he was just been fantasizing all this time and there's no such thing as Moon Knight, etc. But that was like a very well-regarded comic book, you know, and apparently it's quite possible to do like a whole season based on that. Story's like quite meaty.
Yeah.
So it just seems a bit odd to kind of introduce that towards the end of episode 4. You've only got 2 more episodes. I doubt they're going to spend 2 episodes in this institution. Probably you may get all of episode 5 in there, or half of it or something. So it just seems a bit odd, really, that they've kind of done that, whereas maybe season 2 should have been that, or the end of this season should have been that twist.
Yeah, it's a season two or three type thing, isn't it? It's not, don't do this as your introduction. Although I do wonder if, because you see this a lot where they loosely adapt celebrated comic arcs and they'll maybe do it in one episode of a TV show, or they'll maybe do it as part of another film. Planet Hulk, for example, was in Ragnarok, but it wasn't anything like that story, really. It was just the Hulk is a gladiator on an alien planet. That's all they took from that. So I do wonder if they feel like we can touch on this thing. We can play with it a little bit, but we're worried about losing the audience because, let's face it, they're making this for mass market appeal, which I don't think they necessarily need to do with the Disney Plus shows, because there are people that will still only ever watch the films because they just don't want to have their life consumed by watching Marvel stuff. That's valid. So they could get away with just, you know, let's do a season of something where Oscar Isaac is cutting about an asylum. Why not? You have to make it good, of course, but there's no guarantee they would use those six episodes effectively.
Actually, just come to think of it, do we know that this series takes place in the present day? That's actually not confirmed, is it? It's quite possible this could be happening in the 90s or something.
I think we've seen smartphones and things. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
But it doesn't have to be set right now. You know, it could be a couple of years ago. Or it doesn't seem to be during the blip because everything seems normal. It's probably after the blip. And I don't think Marvel jump around in time very often. You can usually the films and TV shows are set roughly around each other. You know, there might be some difference to this happens before this or whatever. But
what were these Egyptian gods doing when Thanos came down?
Well, they established that. They were just not interested. There was nothing to do with them. Did they get blipped? I don't know. Probably.
Okay, so yeah, it was an interesting twist, but I don't know. Again, I'm being quite negative on this episode. I know it's not seen as everyone's favourite episode. I watched it yesterday, and I was like, it definitely was an interesting episode. It was definitely, I think it is the best of the four, to be honest. But I don't know. There's a few things about Moon Knight that I haven't quite kind of connected to.
There was something in the air with this episode as well, because everybody that got advanced access, which wasn't me this time, unfortunately, for whatever reason, they never got back to me. Whatever it happens, but everybody that got advanced access, I've seen the first four episodes. And you won't believe what happens at the end of the fourth episode. So it's one of those establishing hype in a way for something that's coming. And then, but I don't know. I have got advanced access to Marvel Disney Plus shows before. And contrary to what some people believe, it doesn't come with a brief that everybody has to say the same thing about the stuff. It's just, if you're not spoiling it, then there's only so much you can say. And it's, yeah, I've seen the first four episodes, and the fourth episode is a game changer. It seemed to come up a lot, and I didn't think it was. When the asylum twist happened, I didn't even really see it as a twist. I just saw it as something that was, well, yeah, I kind of expected this to happen at some point, or a version of this to happen at some point. I expected them to get trapped inside their head and interact more freely. I expected that to happen. The setting being an asylum, all right, I didn't necessarily predict that, but yeah, the story was coming, right? Surely it's one of the expected things, but I wouldn't say it's a game changer, and I wouldn't say it blew my mind, and I wouldn't say that it was all that exciting. You know?
Yeah, I just think it's just too obvious that it's not, I don't know, it just hasn't wrong-footed me enough, I suppose. Because you literally see him get shot by Harrow and then in slow motion fall down, or fall through the air backwards, you know. And then we kind of cut to this. So it's very obvious that in the microseconds before he hits the ground, he's just imagining all of this.
Yeah.
I'm guessing the third personality will emerge and then that will kind of kick us back into the reality in that tomb, possibly, or, you know, in episode five. So it just seems they're not going to spend very long in the hospital. I wouldn't be surprised if it's like 10, 20 minutes of the next episode, then we're out. Because they've got the rest of the show to wrap up.
There's a trailer where there's a purple laser in the sky from a pyramid, so that'll be to do with Amit getting out.
Yeah, well, there has to be a purple laser in the sky. That's another thing.
Yeah, you need a sky beam.
Sky beam, yeah, has to happen. And this episode ends on a bit of a comical note, really, where they're running down a corridor together, Stephen and Mark, and they come across a kind of hippopotamus lady who apparently is the Egyptian goddess of childbirth and fertility, Taboret. I didn't know that at the time, but a bit of Googling again helps. But I'm interested to see why the Egyptian goddess of childbirth and fertility is there, in a sense, because is that just something that Stephen would know about and he's just imagined that she's there? Or is it a goddess who can enter people's minds? And so I don't really know what the relevance of her being there.
Apparently, if you've read the comics, you might have some idea of what she'll end up doing. I haven't, but you would get it on Wikipedia or something if you really wanted to. I'm counting on the show telling me, you know, that whole, you say you did your research after this, didn't really have to, because it's a cliffhanger. It's a weird CGI hippo creature that says hi. what's happening there? And then there's your hook. That's next week, they'll tell us. So that's why I didn't bother doing any research, really. I'm quite enjoying the ride with this because I don't know what's coming, even though they have changed things around and they combine characters in the MCU and whatever, just to give you something different, even if you do know the source material. But most of the time on previous stuff, someone will show up and I will have a basic idea of what I expect them to do. And normally they don't stray too far from it. For example, when WandaVision, when I was theorizing, and everybody was theorizing that Agnes was Agatha Harkness. And my actual working theory was, maybe she's not Agatha Harkness, maybe she's just Agnes, but she might as well be Agatha Harkness. And then they revealed that was her name anyway. Spoiler for WandaVision. But when I see these things and I know who the characters are, I'm like, okay, I'm going to expect maybe they'll take this or maybe they'll do this. And then sometimes they surprise me, sometimes they don't. But in this, I'm just like, yeah, no idea. Quite looking forward to next week to finding out what they do with this hippo god thing.
Yeah, yeah, I'm definitely interested to see what happens next. You know, I don't want to be too down on the episode. I keep feeling I'm coming across far too negative on the podcast. I did enjoy this episode. It was definitely the best of the four because it did something interesting by the end. But I just have my concerns with Moon Knight, I think. I don't think six episodes is enough. I think you need a bit longer.
Yeah,
seems a bit strange.
I feel like eight or nine might have suited this series a bit more just to give you a bit more time to drink everything in. Yeah. But that final scene as well, obviously the CGI hippo thing was striking, but then you had Oscar Isaac doing two different reactions depending on the character and in the same scene, obviously. And it speaks to that physicality. You can tell they're different people. And when they're interacting, especially in this episode, when they're face-to-face, you almost forget they're the same person or the same actor because he does a good job of distinctly creating these two characters, which as an actor he does all the time. He's just doing it twice in the same show, I guess.
Yeah, we'll go back to my other point. I just want to see more of that from Oscar Isaac. Yeah. So I want a scene where it's just him literally playing both those characters at the same, you know, well, not at the exact same time, but, you know, where you see the conversation happening between them and you've seen the physicality and the voice change rapidly. It's quite an interesting kind of acting challenge, I think. I'd just like to see more of that. Yeah. That's always been, for me anyway, that's always the joy of split personality kind of stuff, you know, is when you're not taking it too seriously. Because I know it's a real mental condition. So I don't want to, you know, it's not for my entertainment as such. But, you know, but normally in movies and things, Jekyll and Hyde and stuff, and all these things that kind of riff on it a little bit, that's always the joy to me is the performance that the actor can give playing those different people. And I just feel that Moon Knight, its approach hasn't been as entertaining for me. So I'd rather they move away from the whole reflections thing. It's just, I think it's a bit overplayed right now. Anyway, thanks for coming, Craig. Anything else you want to add before we go?
They do keep suggesting that Layla could be or is Khonshu's preferred avatar. So maybe we'll have a Layla version of the Moon Knight costume before the end of the season. I think they've done that in the comics before. There's been different people that have been avatars of Khonshu because it's comics, but it tends to play around with it for a little while and revert back and whatever. But I think the two versions of Moon Knight we've got already are pretty good, with the Mr. Knight persona that Steven has versus the actual traditional Moon Knight that Mark wears. I think that's really good. So I would like to see the Layla variant of it. I think we'll get it. I do think we will. Because I guess that if Mark is believed dead, she has to go get him. And then in order to go get him, she has to be inhabited by him for a bit. That's my guess.
Okay, well, thanks, Craig, for coming along to talk about Moon Knight. Do you have anything to plug before you leave us?
Just the usual stuff. So Neil Before Blog is the website, neilbeforeblog.co.uk, Facebook and Twitter under Neil Before Blog. I review Moon Knight, I review Star Trek stuff, I review Arrowverse stuff. There's a podcast attached called Neil Before Pod, where the most recent episode we released was our chat about Star Trek Discovery Season 4. Bit late, but it's there. Upcoming is our Alien Day special, where we talk about Prometheus this year. That's how far into that canon we are. And when We Made This, you can find me all over the place. Podcast 616, Real Talk, wherever I'm needed. I'm going to be appearing on We Are Starfleet to cover Strange New Worlds when that starts pretty soon, so I'm pretty excited about that. And personally on Twitter, you can find me under Nemesis4909, which is initially a Resident Evil reference that became a Star Trek reference when they released Nemesis. So things aligned, so we're all good there. Maybe the god Nemesis will show up in the MCU at some point, and then we can add that string.
Oh, that would make your little bit at the end take twice as long.
It would. I'd have to add another bit.
There's another reason, yeah. Well, thanks for that. So you can find me as well at Real Talk. That's where I mainly am now. Hosting that every week, the film podcast for We Made This. So head over to Twitter for us there at Real Talk WMT. I think I'll probably be on Podcast 616 at some point as well in the near future. So thanks for coming. Remember, Podcast 616 is part of the We Made This Podcast Network, and a taste of other shows could be heard in just a second. But for now, until next time, it's good night from Moonlight.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
Frame to frame.
Well, for Sean's benefit, these are all ex-players. Just so you know, mate. Yes, they used to be NBA players.
If you don't know who Shaquille O'Neal is, there's a problem.
Okay. Let me just announce that right then. There's a problem because just to put my cards on the table, I did not know that these were real basketball players until halfway through the movie, and then the joke only hit me halfway through. I was like, oh, now I understand where the gag's coming from, because I thought
you've never heard of Shaquille O'Neal.
I mean, I've heard of him, but I didn't know that was him. So yeah, it's probably not really much of an answer, is it? Really, it's pretty lame.
Chucky Vision, a Chucky podcast.
This was their first film as Full Moon. Before that, they were Empire Pictures for a while, and they did a few movies, produced a few movies. This was the first big hit for Full Moon. I think it was just this film for 89, and then in 90, they produced like 3 films, and then in 91, they produced like 5 films, and then in 92, they were producing like 10 films all in one year.
Yeah, that's a lot.
They exploded during the early 90s, and they've still been kind of like that today. Like, announced in like 2019, and then it was done during 2020. They announced the Deadly 10, these 10 movies they were going to produce and create in 1 year, and they were going to live stream all behind the scenes and stuff. Sadly, they only made like 2 of those films because then Corona hurt, so like couldn't actually push out as much as they used to. That's kind of their spirit, kind of this independent spirit. You know, Troma does it as well. A weird mix between quality and quantity.
Academy Watch, a prestige film podcast.
Every other discipline in film comes from somewhere else. Acting comes from theater, writing comes from writing, you know, like music comes from music. Like everything comes from somewhere else except editing. Editing is the one thing that is intrinsically filmic about film. And to not show that is just a hilarious disrespect to
it's completely
editors.
It's completely insane. That's the one cat, like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I hate it. I hate cutting any of them. But I can kind of squint and sort of kind of see if you've got to pick ones to eliminate, like eliminating some of these technical ones. And I mean, score seems like a bridge too far to me, but, you know, fine. But like you said, editing is just such an intrinsic part of the art.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.
These hands were once used for battle. Now they're but humble tools for peace. I need to figure out exactly who I am.
Okay, we're back, Craig.
We're back.
We're here to talk about the Thor trailer, the new Thor Love and Thunder trailer, or the teaser, I should say, actually, because it's not the full trailer. It's only a minute and a half. So it's only a teaser, but it gives you quite a substantial look at what the new Thor movie is going to be. And I'm quite surprised, actually. It's coming out in July. Somehow I had it in my head that this wasn't coming out for quite a few months after Doctor Strange 2, and it would be like autumn or winter in my head. But it's a summer movie, so it won't be long before this arrives.
It's the shortest amount of time between a trailer being released and the film being released that they've had since, I don't know when, for a while anyway, for a long time, maybe since the MCU started.
Yeah, they don't often like to kind of advertise or start promoting the one movie before, you know, like a movie beyond the one that we're coming up to, if that makes sense. So normally they'd release this after Doctor Strange 2 has come out.
Then you've got basically a month.
We've got like a month, yeah, so they had to kind of do it early. Maybe that's why it's a teaser as well, because they don't have to give away as much.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get a full one after Doctor Strange is out. Anyway, we'll get talking about Thor. So, yeah, I think general thoughts on the Thor trailer. You can go first, Craig. What do you think?
I really like it. I loved the last Thor movie. I mixed on the first two. I don't mind the second one. I'm unpopular in that respect, in lots of respects, but certainly in that respect that I didn't mind the second one. I'm not a huge fan of the first one. I just didn't vibe with it for various reasons. But the third Thor film, it unites the Thor fandom, doesn't it? Everybody loves it. It's wacky, yeah. It's colourful, it's hilarious, it's all those things. Whereas this is, again, a bit more of the same. But I actually find the character arc that Thor follows through all his appearances quite interesting, because he spends most of his life being pointed in various directions. So he's been groomed as the next king of Asgard growing up. He rejects that or has that taken from him. So he goes and goes to be an Avenger. So is he a king? Is he an Avenger? Is he a guardian? Is he a Ravager? Because you see him with the Ravagers in this teaser. Is he a god? Is he just a guy? Which is he? And I think that whole search for purpose and identity has been a big thing for Thor over the many, many appearances. And this seems to be fully leaning into that as well, because you do see him wearing different costumes and wearing different hats, literally. And so he's still trying to figure himself out and he's getting back to himself. And I think that most of this trailer is in the first maybe half hour of the film, not very much of it, I think, because it seems like the Guardians won't be in it very much. I'm guessing he just decides, right, this isn't for me, I'm off. That's good for the Guardians, because if Thor's on that team, what are the rest of them for, really?
Yeah. They just had to fly him to different planets and say, right, sort that out. Yeah. We'll just sit here and wait. Yeah, it's good that you picked up on that, because I definitely think that's going to be the theme, isn't it? Thor's place in the world is going to be another thing. Yeah, because it looks like he's mixing with the Guardians and doesn't quite click there. And it looks like they drop him off at Sakaar, it looks like. So he stays there with Korg. You know, it looks like he definitely decides that he wants to get buff again, because he's doing all his
CrossFit
exercising. Yeah. He loses his beer belly from Avengers movies. But also, you can definitely see that there's other characters that have taken on his previous roles, because obviously you got Valkyrie there as the kind of head of the new Asgard.
Yeah.
So she's taken on that. That should really be his
attending
role.
Local council meetings, discussing what day the bins go out or whatever, just stuff that no one wants to do.
And you've also got, towards the end, you've got Jane Foster appearing as Thor. So she's literally taken on his position as the god of thunder. So yeah, it looks like he's going to have to realise who he is throughout the course of the movie, is my guess, and probably by the end realise that he has to be the god of thunder again and take on that
role. Or something different.
And we're back. something different. Yeah, I don't know. But definitely, interesting. I like the tone of it. The Taika Waititi's back, so it's got that Thor Ragnarok look. Very colourful. Looks funny. There's already a good few scenes here that are quite amusing. Especially, I think the best one was the moment with the Guardians, where he's looking. He interrupts or gets in the way of Peter Quill's gaze when Peter Quill's looking at his friends, and then Thor kind of leans in. So that's really funny. Yeah, there's lots of good little moments here, and this is only a teaser, so I'm sure the full trailer, where we really get into the story, will be even better. Because we don't even see the villain here, do we? We know Christian Bale was playing, is it Gore, God Butcher, is it? So we don't see him at all. So it looks like there's going to be quite a lot going on here, so I was quite interested. One thing I didn't expect to see, though, is you see some of the Greek gods. So we have Zeus.
Yeah, played by Russell Crowe. You see the back of his head. And he has the lightning bolt. There's something that looks a bit cheap about that lightning bolt. I wonder if that's a deliberate Taika Waititi thing. There's a bit of a gag. The Olympus gods aren't as good as the Norse gods or whatever. Maybe they'll be playing around with that. This kind of pantheon of gods that are considered not as good as the other ones. And it looked like a bit of a riff on Asgard as well, because you saw like floating islands and things like that. So yeah, they're just aliens, I suppose, aren't they?
This question came to me as well when I played the God of War video games. So the Greek gods and the Norse gods, do they exist and do they coexist? That's what I don't understand
about how
this trailer's brought in the Greek gods. They coexist. So, but don't you have a god of thunder or god of lightning in the Greek gods? I mean, that's Zeus, isn't it? Doesn't he control lightning? That's why you see him with the lightning bolt.
Yeah.
But isn't Thor god of thunder? So he's like the god of...
Well, he's the Norse god of thunder, whereas the Greeks have their own pantheon. But it's just different mythologies exist, and they're all weird interdimensional or aliens or whatever. Because Hercules is a character in the MCU. Not in the MCU, and he might be now. He might appear in this film, we don't know. But he's a character in the comics. And he's got his mythological backstory, but he's a Marvel character, big strong guy.
I think it's just the power sharing thing. I always thought, well, you can only have like one God of Thunder. They can't be like two, or they can't be two that the Norse have got their gods that do this, and the Greeks have got their gods that do this, and it just can't be any crossover. So I've always, in my head, I've always thought those mythologies are separate things. So when you've got like these video games and now this trailer here, saying that they kind of like coexist, or they, you know, in the same universe, my brain does like a bit of a backflip. I think, well, yeah, that can't be right, because how can you have two gods of thunder and lightning, and how does that work anyway? But it'll be interesting to see what the Olympians are up to.
Well, there's a rumor that the panther god that was seen in Black Panther's in this film as well, so I'm guessing that they'll maybe follow Gore around, and they'll just see dead pantheons of gods everywhere until they catch up with them at some point.
Well, that big monster you see is apparently a god as well. So that big kind of creature thing, so that's probably an early victim of...
Where that's a almost one-to-one recreation of a comic panel where that artist will not get paid for them using that, because Marvel really suck at that.
Yeah, that's terrible, isn't it? They make so much money on these movies, you'd think they'd just put aside a little bit just to pay the artists and the creators.
Was it Ed Brubaker who said that he made more money out of appearing in the Winter Soldier film as a cameo than they paid him to adapt the story?
And it takes so much from these stories, don't they, as well? I mean, I'd be really upset if I was somebody who'd made like a award-winning run of Thor comics and they literally just made a movie based on that storyline. I'd want a lot of money for that, because you've got screenwriters that are just pulling from an existing story, essentially.
Well, that's why you have Image Comics and companies like that, because Marvel and DC were shafting the writers and artists, so they thought, well, I'm going to go off and make our own stuff and keep creative control over these things. So it's just it's the nature of it. If you work for any company and if you come up with something that saves them a lot of money, it's legally theirs and you'll get nothing. So that doesn't make it right. I'm not saying that that's right. I think corporate messes like that are, you know, cancerous, but at the same time, I understand that it does happen, and the artists and writers should at least be aware that that's a possibility when they decide to sign up. I suppose they sign up and to do these things when they're young and ambitious, and it's like, yeah, I get to write Captain America and Thor and the Avengers or whatever, and then they make a film out of that story you wrote, and you're like, oh, I'm seeing none of that. Billions of dollars, great.
With Jane Foster in this, do you think that she is the Jane Foster that we know, or do you think she's a variant? Because that's a theory I've read, because of the multiverse thing that's all happening now. Do you think she's just been pulled through from a different universe, and that's why she's got Mjolnir? And
no, I'll hate that if they do that, because let's just they could but I don't think multiverse has to be an answer for everything. We can have characters that just progress and turn into different things and do different things. And the apparently one of the toy sets, I don't know why there's a toy of Jane Foster with cancer, but it suggests they're doing the cancer story. But the Mjolnir, I did notice this, and I'm not usually a frame-by-frame sort of guy, but I did notice that Mjolnir has a lot of cracks in it, so it seems like it's the original, just reforged.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe Peter Dinklage will reappear and deliver a wooden performance as he just shouts while he's rebuilding this hammer.
Fingers crossed for that, it looks good. I was quite entertained by this. I'm pleased it's coming out for summer. Not quite as excited as I am for Doctor Strange, because I think that's going to be a lot more exciting.
I feel like I'm exhausted by the hype for Doctor Strange already.
A little bit.
Because it's become more about how many millions of cameos are we getting in this film rather than what is this film actually going to be. It's, you know, that's more of the discourse on it. Same thing happened with Spider-Man. It became more about how many old characters are returning. Are the two Spider-Men that we used to know returning? Those questions just kept coming up. And it's like, what about the story that they're telling? I might be a bit more interested in speculating as to that, the identity being out here or whatever. So at least this is at least playing it very straight. This is a story about Thor trying to define his purpose in the universe. And there's no suggestion that he's going to be interacting with people from other universes or whatever else. I'm not saying that I hate the idea of the multiverse and whatever. I think it's great. I just get a bit sick of that dominating the conversation in the run-up to these things. Whereas this is, Thor's going to be out there. He's going to be doing stuff, and it's probably going to be very funny. And we can just get excited on that basis.